The National Broadcasting Company presents its regular Sunday morning news feature, News from Europe. This morning, NBC's observers will bring us on-the-spot reports from the warring capitals of London and Berlin. First, we shall hear the overnight developments from the British capital. Go ahead, London.
This is John McVeigh in London. There is no confirmation in London of the German report that a German advance unit this morning entered Athens. On the other hand, there's no special reason to doubt the German claim this time. The British public has been prepared for the past few days for the outcome of the Greek campaign. The front pages of this morning's papers quote German reports of last night that German troops were 17 miles from Athens. Commentators today are writing of the Greek campaign in perspective. Scrutator in the Sunday Times says it has been evident for some time to trained observers that the British troops were fighting a rearguard action. He says they have never been broken and have taken heavy toll of their assailants. They had to retire, as in France and Belgium, because allied troops on their flanks gave way. This may be said without the least reproach to the gallant Greeks, Scrutator notes, since they had been fighting much longer than the British with greater disparity of equipment. The writer emphasizes that the Greek troops who had to withstand the fatal tank thrust from Monastir had no anti-tank weapon. As commentators here see it, the battle was lost in Greece because the Allies couldn't establish local air superiority. With patient work, the Germans overcame the fewness of Bulgarian air drones. A couple of hundred extra British fighters, one writer believes, would have saved the situation. But the German threat to Egypt reduced the number of British fighters that could be sent to the Balkans and reduced it to a figure which ceased to affect the outcome of the struggle in Greece and Yugoslavia. The chief German raid in Britain last night was made on the Merseyside. The raid wasn't an especially heavy one, but there were some casualties and damage. British bombers last night concentrated on the German port of Hamburg. Fires were started in the industrial and dock area. Other attacks were made on Emden, Bremerhaven, Cuxhaven, and the docks at Le Havre and Imwiden. Yesterday, the British sank one supply ship, damaged another, and carried out a successful raid on an aerodrome in Norway. The story that has been popping up for the last day or so in various parts of the world, describing a secret trip of the Turkish president, can't be confirmed in London. The inference, of course, is that President Inuanu has gone off to see Hitler. As far as we can tell from here, the report may be another move in Germany's war of nerves, following the usual German line of spreading false rumors to shake the morale of the particular country in which Germany is interested. The report speaks of the Turkish cabinet seeing the president off on his hush-hush journey from the Ankara station, but it seems certain that the president actually had made a trip under such circumstances, the British ambassador would have known about it. The German claimed to have used Navy units, that is, E-boats, that came through the Dardanelles to help in the occupation of the Greek islands. May also be another imaginative German story whose purpose would be to worry the Turks and cause the British to mistrust the Turkish government. From London, the story can't be checked up on, but if it is true, it certainly marks a complete about-face in Turkish policy. Responsible observers in London think that Germany's next moves may be thrust through Turkey and Spain in that order. But it would be wrong to overlook the possibility that inside the next month or so, Hitler may decide that an invasion of Britain will be the only way to safeguard his empire against the power of American arms production. Probably the majority of military experts and observers here believe that Hitler will only decide on an invasion as a sort of last chance effort, sometime in the late summer or autumn, depending on how his campaigns are working out in the Near East and in Africa. On the other hand, there are good reasons for thinking Hitler may strike against Britain much quicker than is generally expected. He must know that no matter what happens in the Mediterranean, Germany will be a vulnerable target for attack just as long as Britain is unconquered. The Germans undoubtedly have good and exact information on the extent of American arms production. As long as those arms keep coming through to Britain, German control of the Balkans and even the Near East doesn't mean as much as it would otherwise. As the British air raids become more intense, victories in southeastern Europe, in spite of martial music and rolling drums and the German radio, would seem pretty hollow to the German people crouching in their cellars while British bombs tear their cities to bits. Hitler must know, too, that if it ever comes to a struggle between a German-controlled Europe and the New World, an unconquered island of Britain would become a dangerous base for the beginning of an invasion of his European empire. Neutral observers who have recently been able to make personal observations of German morale have told me that they are not at all sure that the German people can stand continued bombing of their cities. These observers have said that they feel certain that a hard and continued British bombing of German cities will crack the German faith in the Nazis and in the invincibility of Germany. If this is true, Hitler can't afford to go through another winter because, according to well-informed observers, next winter should see a tremendous increase in the power of British air attacks against Germany, an increase that will come when American plane factories are well in their stride. Of course, if Hitler can cut the stream of supplies coming across the Atlantic entirely, he will lick Britain. We are given little and vague information on how the Battle of the Atlantic is going, so there is no way of estimating just how successful the submarine and bomber campaign against the Atlantic lifelines is proving. But the extension of the American patrol should add a little to Germany's difficulties. The success of this Atlantic battle will probably determine Hitler's next move. If the Germans think that Britain can't be starved out this summer, the logical move would be an invasion attempt. The German high command might well feel that the conquest of Britain, difficult as it would be, might be worth the lives of a few hundred thousand soldiers. If the Germans are thinking along those lines, few military experts would dare say more than that the attempt would probably be unsuccessful. A German airman captured in a recent attack on London said the war will be over in 3 weeks because Germany will have invaded England by then. The airman and a compatriot who were captured were locked up for the rest of the night in a police station. They demanded bomb-proof shelters instead of cells. A London bobby said to them, "You have to take the same chances as we do." If the German invasion of Britain is unsuccessful, it'll be chiefly because the Royal Air Force fighters have been able to keep control of the skies over Britain. Today, some details are announced of Britain's newest and deadliest fighter, the Hawker Typhoon. It's a little single-seater, low-wing monoplane driven through the air by the Sabre, a 24-cylinder liquid-cooled motor that develops 2,400 horsepower on the takeoff, nearly 1,800 horsepower at its rated speed. The Typhoon will do better than 400 miles an hour. It'll soon be in service. The design was conceived in March 1937, and the first plane flew in February 1940, a good example of how far ahead plane designers must think.
That was NBC's reporter in the British Isles, John McVane. And for a summary of the news from the Reich, we shall now hear from Berlin. Go ahead, Berlin.
Hello, NBC. This is Gerd Achmat speaking from Berlin. Athens is in German hands. The Greek capital was entered at 9:25 this morning by German tank formations, which hoisted the swastika banner on the Acropolis something before 10 o'clock, Athens time. The news was sent here by a German DNB correspondent who has remained in Athens throughout the entire 3 weeks since Germany's war on Greece began, apparently without being interned. And we got the news here at about 11, as it took only 23 minutes to get it through. The entry of the German advance guard was hailed with joy, we learned, by the Germans who were left in the city, while the Greeks looked on quietly. Other German troops drove ahead to the Isthmus of Corinth, capturing the city and securing the canal that cuts across the isthmus. Further to the westward, the Adolf Hitler regiment of the SS troopers arrived at the Gulf of Patras, took that city, and set across to enter the Peloponnesus. The next place whose fall we are likely to hear of will perhaps be Sparta. The high command reports that numerous British were taken prisoner in the capture of Corinth, with others retreating to the southward into Peloponnesus. The Air Force was again active yesterday, sinking 3 vessels for 27,000 tons, so they must have been of considerable size. In northern Africa, the British attack west of Salum at Caputo was driven off and a sally from Tobruk was repulsed. In the Atlantic, German submarines sank 5 enemy vessels for a total of 39,000 tons, while planes accounted for a 5,000-tonner and a British destroyer, it is said. Liverpool was attacked by German bombers yesterday, as well as ports on the south and east coast of England. All in all, the British yesterday are reported as having lost 4 planes. The British raided Hamburg and lost 2 more planes there, we are told. Military damage is denied, but there was damage to houses and civilians were killed and injured, bombs dropping chiefly in residential districts. Has Germany enough men? That is the question asked by the Frankfurter Zeitung in a leading article in today's Sunday edition. Indeed, the question seems justified enough, for everywhere the people are worked to their full capacity, with German armies running into the many millions standing guard all over Europe from the Arctic Ocean to the Mediterranean. That alone is enough to account for a shortage of manpower in Germany itself, which is only made up for to a very small degree by the 3 million or so prisoners of war and Italian, French, Czech, Norwegian, Danish, and other foreign workers who are employed all over the country in all sorts of capacities. Many waiters in restaurants, for instance, are foreigners, and I have actually found occasions where I got along better by speaking French to them than German. But the Frankfurt Zeitung is really more interested in the future than in the present. It lists some of the many tasks that await the Germans when the war is over. Reconstruction in the interior, the new ordering of Europe, colonial activities, Germany's new place in world trade, the reorganization of international commodities markets and capital markets, in which latter it believes that wars will play a leading part. There is new construction, new automobile highways far beyond the German borders, rapid transit lines, electrification, new sources of water power, following up the advances made in production under the four-year plan, and intensive agricultural production in backward regions. German shipping must once more sail seas that are really free, the paper says. Tropical regions must be administered and developed and their human material properly led and managed, so as to make them veritable models of what a colony should be. And air traffic must be expanded on the hugest scale. Those are some of the projects in the air. Wherever Germans find time to foregather and talk about the future. They are just bursting with enthusiasm to begin, and the contrast with the weariness of the last years of the First World War is striking enough. Everyone's thought is to see to it that the part played by Germany, the have-not country, in the new world, after it has won the war, will be worthy of her in every way. But do not perhaps these new tasks go beyond her power? The Frankfurter Zeitung thinks not. Certainly not as regards the quantities of men that are available when all the armies are disbanded and returned to peacetime pursuits. The German building program alone will call for expenditures of 25 billion marks per year, says Dr. Tott, her chief of construction for everything from auto roads to the West Wall. But quantity is not the question. Has Germany got the right sort of men to handle these huge tasks? Again, the Frankfurter Zeitung thinks it has. The inferiority complex from which Germans suffered in the past is gone. They feel themselves today quite as good as any Englishman ever did his own people. But experience shows, says the paper, that Germans have always been able to master great tasks of organization. They are showing it today in their administration of Norway and Holland, which it is claimed have won the admiration of the managed people themselves. German colonies before 1914 may have been small, but they were models of good management. And in the past, Germans built up worldwide banking and business organizations without the aid of a great center of their own, such as London, and without the control of the seas which Britain had. German engineers built bridges and waterworks and electric plants all over the world, and did the German name notice honor by the quality of their work. When the German management of defeated nations is compared with that of the British and the French after 1918, or even with the American staff of Parker Gilbert managing German reparations, it stands out for its efficiency. And so the Frankfurter Zeitung comes to the conclusion that Germany has the manpower and that it is good enough to handle the tremendous tasks that await her, not only to manage Europe, but to have a large say in the way in which the world is run. A vivid description of Belgrade is given in today's Frankfurter Zeitung too. The former capital of Yugoslavia is a city without a present, its correspondent says. Large sections about the many military objectives are in ruins. This is Theodor Knaut speaking from Berlin, returning you to NBC.
And thus concludes NBC's summary of overseas developments. This morning we heard from the warring capitals of London and Berlin. This is the National Broadcasting Company.